The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Glad you're with us on this sunny Wednesday afternoon. Hey, if you're seeing some snow, I got some reports this morning of Anacortes and other areas in the South Sound that were seeing some snow. If you are seeing some snow, will you shoot me a text? Because as you know, I have childlike wonder when it comes to snow. You can text me at 98973. Sounds like we actually might get some on Friday and Saturday, which would be very, very exciting. But I'd like to find out if you're seeing any this afternoon. We have the largest reporting staff in the world. All you have to do is text in 98973, and we'll keep you posted on the snow possibilities and lots of other news to get to. Let's jump right into The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
Well, I will tell you, down in Olympia, things are getting crazy. I told you this will be the most radical legislative session in our state's history. And now we're starting to find out how much it's going to cost the average family. And I hope you have a spare $2,000 to $5,000 a year. Not exaggerating this. This is the cost of this legislative session if they get their way. If they're able to ram through all the tax hikes that they're talking about. For an average middle-class family, depending on what kind of vehicles you have, what kind of home heating you have, all of that, extra $2,000 to $5,000 a year. I'll get into that in just a minute. Then you heard in our newscast about the violence in Seattle again last night. This is what happens when you defund the police. And more than ever, maybe it's just the stage of life I'm in, but I have a lot of friends who either have moved to other parts of the country or are thinking about moving. As I've told you, I don't have any interest in moving. I'd rather stay and fight for a region I love and for a place I believe in still, despite how crazy it's gotten politically. But if you want to get away, let me tell you about a little town in Mississippi. Natchez. Hope I'm saying it right. You Mississippians. Natchez? Natchez? Nacho cheese? Nacho cheese, Mississippi? No, Natchez, Mississippi, which is a historic city. It's one of the oldest settlements on the Mississippi River. It's older even than New Orleans. And from what I'm told, Natchez has these beautiful sunsets and wonderful festivals. They have bike paths that wind their way all around the city. They have these historic antebellum homes, although we can't say antebellum anymore. I'll just call them Lady A homes. Natchez, Mississippi is offering people $2,500 in moving expenses and $300 a month for a year if you want to relocate to their beautiful little city. Now, I've never been to Mississippi. I've talked to my wife that that's one part of the country I've never seen. I wouldn't mind going to the deep south. I've never been to Alabama, Mississippi. I'd like to go in the fall. I'd like to see a nighttime, you know, LSU, Alabama college football game. I think that'd be pretty cool. But anyway, if you're looking to escape the madness of Seattle, you can get $2,500 up front and $300 a month if you want to go to Natchez, Mississippi. Why would anybody want to move, though? Let's get right into our big lead.
The big lead. Your tax dollars at work.
So when you defund the police, crime goes up. I know that's a shocking concept, but we are seeing that in Seattle. We had a record number of murders this century last year in Seattle, and we're off to a robust pace here in 2021. Last night, a suspect shot two girls. They're around 19 years old. And then when the police responded, The suspect, police say, leveled his gun at the officers. Seattle police opened fire, shot and killed the suspect. After they shot and killed that guy, they were looking for other suspects, additional victims. And that's where they found at the Jimi Hendrix Museum in the parking lot, there were these two young women there with multiple gunshot wounds. They transported them to Harborview. One of the two young women has died. The second is in critical condition. And again, the suspect is dead after police shot him when he leveled his gun at Seattle police. But we're seeing this on an all too regular basis. Violent shootouts on the streets of Seattle. And the reason for all of this is because we still have this mania that we need fewer cops on the road. It was the big catchphrase of 2020. We were going to reimagine police.
The folks in law enforcement that share the goals of reimagining policing.
Reimagining policing in the 21st century.
Rethinking and reimagining policing.
Community efforts to reimagine policing.
To reimagine policing.
We have to reimagine what policing looks like.
Reimagining policing, reimagining our public safety.
Reimagine a citizen-led approach.
We can begin to reimagine law enforcement.
Reimagine public safety in this country.
What can we do to reimagine public safety?
Reimagining public safety.
To reimagine public safety.
We must reimagine what public safety looks like.
So we will just make up this word, reimagine. I know it's a real word, but I had never heard it used before last year. And then all of a sudden, everybody started using the phrase reimagining police. So what does that mean? There's a story in the Seattle Times, turmoil surfaces in Seattle City Council's push to reimagine public safety. Now, as you know, the City of Seattle Council, they want to eliminate a bunch of cops and just send out social workers to most calls. And I'm sure that a social worker would have done a bang-up job last night when the gunman who had shot two young women and murdered one, and he leveled his gun at a social worker. I'm sure the social worker would have been able to talk him down. But that is what the Seattle City Council wants, is they want social workers taking the place of many cops. But I want to just read to you one paragraph from the Seattle Times story. And they're talking about one of the people who's leading the research to reimagine the police is somebody named Sean Glaze. And the Times interviewed Sean Glaze. But listen to this paragraph and tell me if you can make any sense out of this at all. This is all the different organizations that have their hand in the cookie jar to get some of the money that's out there right now. The city's contract to conduct the research, called the Black Brilliance Research Project, is not actually with King County Equity Now. In order to sidestep requirements that the contract be put out for bid, it was awarded to Freedom Project, a Seattle nonprofit who then subcontracted much of the work to King County Equity Now. So every group has a name. It's like another game of Boggle where you shake the dice and woke words come out and they make the name of an organization. So they started the research as the Black Brilliance Research Project. They did not work with King County Equity Now. And then they awarded a bid to the Freedom Project. That's a lot of fancy-named, woke-named organizations that are supposed to fix violence in Seattle. The record murder rate. And I would suggest that if you were more about having a name that will attract grant money, If you care about that more than you care about actually fixing the problem will never be fixed. And that's talking about one of the people who's working on this, Sean Glaze, again, from the Seattle Times story. And this is where I need to start understanding language better, because I don't understand much about language in 2021. But they said Sean Glaze uses the pronouns they and them, said they had been working without a contract. Now, what I don't know is, does they mean the group that Sean Glaze is a part of, or does they mean Sean Glaze is as an individual? And that's where, you know, language has gotten so fuzzy, where I truly have no idea if they're talking about an individual or an organization that this person is a part of. And again, how do you get to solving problems if just the language between here and the problem solving is confusing at best? And it's, you know, all these names: Black Brilliance Research Project, King County Equity Now, Freedom Project. I really don't know how you solve problems when you seem to be more concerned with having socially acceptable words within the name of your organization. But when you look at how and why crime is so bad in Seattle, you don't need to look any further than that. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. I told you so.
Yeah, down in Olympia, our tax dollars are being spent at a record rate right now. And it is very, very troubling, because it's going to cost the average family perhaps hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars a year. And I'll tell you about the latest one. There's a bill in Olympia. And let me give you just a little, my personal tale of warmth that will be relatable to some of you. When my wife and I built our house 17 years ago, we wanted a big natural gas fireplace, because we had lived in the same neighborhood earlier. Lots of big trees. Power goes out a lot. And if all you have is electric heat when your power goes out, you're out of luck. So we thought, well, let's get a big radiating gas fireplace, and if the power goes out, we'll be able to heat our house. We'll have a gas stovetop. We'll be able to cook food, keep our family warm at least, because we have power outages, you know, quite often. And we'll be able to take care of our family. Plus, natural gas. Man, when I was growing up, it was the clean energy alternative. There were commercials every day when I was growing up about how efficient and clean and good for the environment natural gas was and is. So we wanted to do what was right for the environment. We have a natural gas furnace, water heater, fireplace, stovetop, my barbecue grill out on my deck. His natural gas. It's a beautiful thing. It's the best fuel source I've ever had in all the places I've lived. The Washington State Legislature wants to get rid of it. As part of their initiative to get rid of all fossil-based fuels by the end of this decade, the legislature wants to eliminate natural gas as a fuel option in our state. Now, first and foremost, that would eliminate thousands and thousands and thousands of good-paying jobs. Blue-collar tradesmen, welders who put together these natural gas lines, people who have worked in what they always believed to be a good, clean, and noble industry. And then there are people like my wife and me. Electric heat in the Puget Sound area is incredibly expensive. If you live over in Douglas County, where I had a vacation place, electric heat is cheap as can be because you're living right by the Columbia River and the hydroelectric dams. But here in the Puget Sound area, they've made electricity unbelievably expensive. And so they want us to convert eventually our hot water heater, our furnace, our fireplace away from natural gas. That will cost us, you know, a good electric furnace can cost you $15,000, $20,000, furnace and water heater. They want you to pay much, much, much more for the power that you use. And not only that, but natural gas fires a bunch of our electrical grid. But also, if the power goes out again, then the Monson household, instead of being able to cook food on the barbecue, on the stovetop, staying warm thanks to our fireplace, instead of being somewhat self-sufficient, if the power goes out, and it does all the time in California, where they have similarly crazy laws, they have brownouts all the time in California, then we're captive. We're hostages of the government. And it will cost people around here a fortune more if they get rid of natural gas and eventually all fossil fuels in the state. You'll have to trade in your older vehicle for an electric car. Can you afford that by 2030? That's another one of the bills in Olympia. You have to get rid of an older car because electric is all that will be supported. You will not be able to get car tabs on a gas or diesel vehicle. That's another bill in Olympia. So what do you do about it? Well, you got to let them know. This is House Bill 1084, and you need to call the legislative hotline and let them know if you cannot afford this. And the number is 800-562-6000. Okay, I'm going to give it to you one more time. House Bill 1084. And call the hotline at 800-562-6000. And tell this radical leftist legislature that you can't afford a couple thousand more in energy bills and higher taxes this year. Because they are coming for you big time. And that is your big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
He has been fighting Antifa unlike anybody else in this country. Citizen journalist Andy Ngo. Portland's his home base. The battle is on. It's gotten ugly. And we're going to talk to him the entire next half hour. Don't miss it here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, Seattle and really Portland have been ground zero for the worst of the rioting in America over the last year. Antifa has been behind it. And, you know, I started tracking the Antifa movement a few years ago when Kasham Sawant revealed who was controlling her on the Seattle City Council. And the socialist Marxist group that she is a part of, they have a very explicit goal, and that is to tear down cities from within, to destroy them, and then to rebuild in a Marxist image. And a lot of people thought, well, this will get a lot better once Joe Biden's elected. And it has not gotten better, because this is not about liberal versus conservative. It's not about Democrat versus Republican. But it's my contention that this is about Marxism versus capitalism. There is somebody who is far more learned than I on all of these issues. Andy Ngo is the New York Times best-selling author. He is the author of a brand new book called Unmasked: Inside Antifa's Radical Plan to Destroy Democracy. And Andy joins us once again here on the Dory Monson Show. Andy, it's always great to talk with you.
Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Let's start with just the subtitle of your book, Inside Antifa's Radical Plan to Destroy Democracy. As I said, I've been saying for years that this is about Marxism versus capitalism. Is that what you believe to be true as well?
That's part of the story, but I think it's actually something bigger. I think it's more about anarchy, anarchist communism in particular, versus the American philosophy. So the whole agenda of the Antifa political movement is to destroy the nation states around the world because they don't recognize any governments. But they view the United States as the main enemy. And that's because the United States has been a force for exporting liberal democracy around the world, property protection rights, freedom of expression, the rule of law. All of that is anathema to their worldview. So they believe that they can, that they must destroy the republic and from its ashes, and that's their words, build a utopia. And it's very grand and theoretical, but then you can look at what happens when they put their plan into action. So last year, for more than 3 weeks, for example, in Seattle, they had taken city property near downtown and claimed it to be an autonomous zone, not under American jurisdiction.
Right.
And they set up a hard border, and they had that border manned by their armed militias. And the city allowed that to happen because they believed that these people were doing it in the name of social justice. And inside, they were radicalizing people with extremist literature. Within days, it devolved into violence, shootings, and then murders.
Well, and so what is their motivation, Andy? Why are they hell-bent on destroying America?
Because they believe, so when they say they're anti-fascist, when you dive into the ideology, as I write in the book, they remake words and concepts to have completely different meanings from how people understand it, how academics understand. So they don't refer to fascism as just a far-right political ideology that was represented in movements like the National Socialists in Germany or Fascist Party in Italy. They define it really to be anything that is opposed to their political worldview. So they view the United States as a fascist imperialistic state. They view capitalism, property rights, freedom of expression as vectors for fascism to be spread. So if you go back a few years and think about what they were doing before they were burning down neighborhoods and cities and seizing territories and buildings, they were involved in political brawls in the streets. Portland was particularly brutal. That's my hometown.
Right.
And it was there that they were able to carry out acts of violence against other citizens. And they were saying that it was bashing the fascist, punching Nazi. And the response from the mainstream left was to legitimize those actions. They thought it was appropriate response to use violence in opposition to somebody's speech or thought.
It's been very disturbing to see how the media covered this over the last year, and it was because they were almost afraid that speaking out against Antifa would somehow be perceived as being against social justice. And I mean, when you have all these powerful forces, when you have people in the streets willing to commit acts of violence, when you have feckless leaders like Ted Wheeler in Portland and Jenny Durkin in Seattle, when you have a media that is afraid to really stand up against all of this destruction, both physical and ideological, that's a pretty powerful concept for the average person to have to battle against when you have all these forces lined up against people who are just wanting to protect our way of life.
That's right. I'm really glad you brought up all those different variables. One question I get asked a lot is, why does it seem like Antifa is a big force now? And that perception of it being like a new phenomenon is not off. Antifa as a movement have been around for a few decades, but it previously was on the fringes of the far left. They were able to move right into the center of the mainstream left because of all the things you just said. So they had support through useful idiots in the media, as well as fellow travelers and sympathizers, and even members who work as journalists. They have the support of the culture. They have the support of foolish politicians like the mayor of Portland, mayor of Seattle, and even some governors as well. And so all of that brought together created this sort of the perfect conditions that allowed for them to continue to grow and to recruit and to embed and make their violence more sophisticated, which is why incrementally through each year from 2016 all the way to 2020, each year it got progressively worse. And then 2020 was when they really showed what they were capable of, which in the example of Portland, that was more than 120 days of recurring violence. And by violence, I'm talking about people setting fires to buildings where people are inside, setting fires to police stations, bringing homemade explosives to the riots and guns and knives, creating no-go zones. And eventually they shot and killed somebody, hunted down a Trump supporter, one of their Antifa security. Michael Rhino, I write about how deadly Antifa actually are.
That was on the streets of Portland. We're talking with Andy Ngo. His book is Unmasked, Inside Antifa's Radical Plan to Destroy Democracy. And he's going to spend another segment with us here, talk about why Seattle, why Portland, why have we become ground zero? Our conversation with Andy Ngo continues in just a moment here on The Dory Monson Show. Back with Andy Ngo. His new book is Unmasked, Inside Antifa's Radical Plan to Destroy Democracy. Andy, you're a little bit younger than me. I grew up here in Seattle. You grew up in Portland. My wife grew up right across the river from Portland in Vancouver, Washington. These were places that valued independence, independent thought, hard work. How have Portland and Seattle become ground zero for this absolutely destructive force that is Antifa?
Well, it's nice to be speaking to somebody from the Pacific Northwest, because when I'm describing the conditions for what's happening on the ground, people in D.C. and New York, just there's a lot of disbelief.
Yeah. But so you're right.
To answer your question, why in particular these cities in the Pacific Northwest? Well, the reason is that these areas are political monocultures. And both Seattle and Portland and some other cities in the Pacific Northwest have had a long history of progressive politics. It's part of the culture. A lot of the people there live alternative or you could view as weird lifestyles just for the sake of it. So it was always counterculture. And I think that provided kind of a really perfect breeding ground for these extremist movements to take root in these areas, because there was no opposition from the center right or there's really no Republican presence in any meaningful way in Portland or Seattle. You know, they have no political power, and they're not those who are elected to in office, either in city council or as a mayor. They have no need to moderate. They are always pushed more and more to the left. So in 2016, with the election of Donald Trump and the universal hatred of the former federal administration and the former president from those who were duly elected to represent citizens, they turned a blind eye to far left extremism. They actually believed Antifa were, quote, anti-fascist, and they believe that Trump was a fascistic president that needed to be resisted.
And you had Joe Biden, who said Antifa is just an idea and denied that it was even a real force. So let me ask you, we only have a couple minutes left. Why have you're a very smart guy. You could have done anything with your life. You put yourself in harm's way. People have seen your Twitter account where you are in the middle of this. You are hated, and hated to the point where there's some who want you dead. Why have you chosen to make this your life's work? Why do you have such passion for fighting against this?
Yeah, Antifa have actually tried to kill me before. They beat me severely in 2019 in downtown Portland, and I was hospitalized with a brain hemorrhage as a result. And they've continued ever since then to try to finish what they started. I do what I do because I'm not the only one who's been victimized by these terrorists. There's been countless of other people, and the majority of them have absolutely no voice and no way to get their story out. I'm very privileged in that, you know, I get interviewed. I'm speaking with you now. I have a book out. I have a large following on social media. I get published in big newspapers. That is a privilege that I want to use to make sure that I'm fighting for justice for other people, people who report their instances of being assaulted to police and nothing ever happens. The media ignores what happens to them. So that's why I do what I do. And it does come at a heavy cost, as you said. And for that reason, unfortunately, I've had to, at least for the moment, leave my hometown in Portland. Just there were all these escalating threats against me, and people were showing up to my home, and the police did nothing.
Note that Andy is out of the country as he does this interview, in part because of threats that he's received. So in the 30 seconds we have remaining, what's the end game? What's the end game for our cities that have been taken over by these clowns?
You know, I wish I could be optimistic, but I think the present and near future will be bleak because all of the variables that allowed the Antifa to grow are still there. Their opposition to Trump was always pretextual. It doesn't really matter that he's not in office anymore. They're going to continue to try to destabilize the areas as they have done since Election Day in November.
It's very scary stuff. It's a great book. It's the most important book of the new year thus far. Unmasked, Inside Antifa's Radical Plan to Destroy Democracy. Everybody in the country's reading it. It's a bestseller, but it is particularly relevant for those of us here in the Pacific Northwest. Andy has done a great job of chronicling how this group has destroyed once great cities. Andy, I wish you nothing but the best. I wish you safety going forward, and I'll look forward to talking to you again about this sometime soon.
Thank you.
Citizen journalist Andy Ngo joining us. The book is Unmasked, and it's a great read. It's a disturbing read, but it's a great read. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. Lots more to come here in the Dory Monson Show.